Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Bloomfield Hills, studied English and theology at Boston College while playing on their football team. He is a funeral director who in 2011 purchased a 10,000-square-foot English-style estate once owned by Stanley Kresge in the Arden Park Historic District of Detroit. In 2017, he purchased and began restoring the Schwitz, a cultural landmark and the only historic bathhouse left in Detroit. A modern-day Renaissance man, his name, Patty Lynch. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Patty Lynch. Used to be neighbors across the street when you were growing up, and since 2008, you've worked with the family business, funeral director, Lynch & Sons. Patty, welcome, an honor to have you.
Thank you so much. I'm honored to be here, Jack.
We've had Mom, Dad, Caitlin, your sister. We've had your uncle, so this is the fifth Lynch.
I'm honored.
All right. Okay, let's start with, speaking of which, your mom and your dad and your childhood.
Okay. So I grew up in the Birmingham-Bloomfield area, and I went to the same school that my mom and my dad attended, which was Holy Name, and my sister went there as well. And after that, I went to Brother Rice, and so I got my share of Catholic education, that's for sure. And I guess I didn't have enough of it because I ended up at Boston College with the Jesuits. It's funny, I was helping my dad with a funeral in high school when I had made the decision to go play football at Boston College, and a priest said, "Oh, I heard you're going to study with the Jesuits." And I said, "Yeah, that's true, Father." And he goes, "Okay, well, come back after 4 years and I'll reteach you Catholicism." And I thought that was a pretty good line. But the truth is the Jesuits had a big impact on my life, and I'm really grateful for the education that my parents, you know, provided for me and my sister.
Well, your dad had a huge impact on your life. He was president of National Funeral Directors Association 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
What's the biggest thing your dad's taught you?
It's a great question. My dad's taught me a lot. My dad's probably taught me more than anybody else, you know, in the world has taught me. I think one thing that really stays with me is the way in which my dad, you know, handles situations and people, especially when someone has died, which is obviously the work that we're in. And being able to work with my dad full time since 2008 really opened my eyes to the impact that he's had on so many different communities. And I think his willingness over the course of 50 plus years to answer the phone in the middle of the night and to end vacations early to help people and all the sacrifices that he's made, that's really been something to witness. And I had somebody come up to me, I remember years ago after a funeral, and the man said, you know, if you can have half the impact on this community that your father's had, you'll be a successful man. And it put it in perspective how much he's provided to so many people.
All right. Your mom, Mary Callahan Lynch, the 14th of 18 children.
Yeah.
Affectionately known as the Diva.
She is a diva.
She was the classical voice coach of the Queen of Soul, Aretha Franklin, amongst other things.
Mm-hmm.
What's the biggest thing you learned from mom?
Well, I think I'm not as good at it as she is, but I don't know if there's anybody in the world that can love unconditionally as much as my mother can. It's extraordinary the way that she loves people no matter what, the way she adored her parents and took care of her parents along with her siblings as they aged. As you mentioned, she's one of 18 children, and the ways in which she's, you know, helped her nieces and nephews and cousins over the years. My mom, for anyone who's ever met my mother, they would know she's kind of a bundle of joy and love. And so I think my father's taught me a lot about hard work and discipline and commitment. And my mom's taught me a lot about unconditional love.
If she was here, she'd say, Jack, Patty, you got to say that I'm the founder of Motor City Lyric Opera.
Deserves a plug.
Okay.
Yeah. It's worth noting that she has overseen her own nonprofit for over 20 years, something that she absolutely doesn't have to do, but chooses to do. And she's brought a lot of classical music to the youth of Metro Detroit over those 20 plus years.
Speaking of classical music, your sister, Caitlin, she's performed all over the world, Metropolitan Opera in New York City.
Yeah.
What's it like to sit in a world-class concert hall and listen to your mom sing or your sister sing opera?
Well, it reminds me that I have zero musical talent, for one. I always refer to my sister as the musical conception because she was born a few years before me and she took every ounce of musical talent. My dad can sing, my mother can sing, and Caitlin's an extraordinary world-class singer. I remember I was at her debut at the Met and seeing her up there. I played college football, and I was around a lot of professional athletes or guys that went on to play in the pros, and her accomplishments put me in mind of those people where it's a combination of a lot of things. You have to be really talented, you have to be a little bit lucky, and you have to be extremely hardworking. And Caitlin, is all of those things. So I'm so glad that she's had the success that she's had.
At Brother Rice, you played football for El Fracasa.
Yep.
He led Brother Rice to 7 state championships. He won 365 games. He was National Coach of the Year.
Mm-hmm.
What's the biggest thing you learned about life and being a man from Coach El Fracasa?
Well, that's a loaded question, Jack. I'll tell a little story that I've told before when people have brought up Coach. My junior year, we were ranked nationally. And off of that team, I think 11 guys played Division I football and 2 went to the NFL. We were, some have said, the best team in Brother Rice history. You know, plenty of guys could argue that. But we were good. And we were extremely cocky, and we knew that we were good. And anyway, we got in trouble because some guys were busted, you know, maybe drinking and partying after a game or something like that. And he was not happy. And he canceled practice. When he found out all about it, we showed up for, like, practice on Monday, and he had canceled practice, which was unheard of. And we thought, oh, my God, this is super scary. And he said, I want to talk to all of you. We're canceling practice. And he sat us down and we thought, oh my gosh, he's going to rip us. And he said, you know what, you guys, you know, you think life is, you know, easy and you're young and you're athletic and you're cocky and you're chasing girls and all of this. And then he went on to talk about how when he met his wife, Phyllis, and they've been, I think they just celebrated like 68 years of marriage. He said, you know, things will change. And you'll get serious. And I bring that story up because it was an opportunity for him to sort of humiliate all of us and to really punish us. And instead, he took it as an opportunity to talk about what matters most to him in life, which was relationships and family, specifically his wife. And it was just really eye-opening to me that he knew. And of course, we felt 10 times worse after he didn't tear us apart and he told us this nice story. So he was an extraordinary motivator, and I would just say that I've learned from him, you know, to really appreciate the people that you have in your life and what they mean to you. And that story is sort of an example of that.
Patty then went on to play linebacker and fullback at Boston College.
Mm-hmm.
But then, after he got out of Boston College, he spent time in Haiti. When we come back, we're going to ask him about what that taught him. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasul, we're with Patty Lynch. And before he went to mortuary school, he lived in Haiti for 4 months in 2006, serving the poorest of the poor. What did that teach you, Patty?
Well, It taught me a lot of things, I guess, but the thing it probably taught me most is how to try to deal with the fact that there are times in life when we are totally and completely helpless. I had come out of an environment at Boston College playing, you know, Division I football and trying to do well academically, and everything was sort of about keeping score, you know, wins, losses, you know, grades, test scores. And then you get to a place like Haiti and those types of accomplishments don't mean anything. And the fact that I did well athletically and academically meant nothing. And there wasn't anything that I could do personally or individually to really change the reality of Haiti in any way. And it kind of broke me down. But I also credit it with the fact that I think I am a better funeral director today and that I can deal with really, really difficult situations that people find themselves in, whether it's suicide or overdose or miscarriage, stillbirth, these sort of unspeakable sadnesses. Haiti taught me how to sit in a room and be a little bit better with the fact that I'm helpless in a lot of situations. But it was painful to kind of learn that lesson because, you know, I would have liked to have accomplished more and have done more, but, you know, Haiti is a difficult place.
If you want to learn more, www.lynchfuneraldirectors.com. All right. 2008, you joined the family business,
right,
which was started in 1948. This is the 75th year of Lynch and Sons.
Yeah.
Tell us about Lynch and Sons.
Okay. This is something I can talk about for sure. My grandfather started in 1948 in Highland Park, not too far from where we are right now, at the corner of Woodward and Davison. And his first job was with Mr. William Vasu, who was a Romanian funeral director, and that's why we still serve most of the Romanian community in Metro Detroit. 75 years later, that relationship is really meaningful to us. But my grandfather had 9 children, and 7 out of the 9, including my father, went into funeral service. And that's why we operate 7 funeral homes in Metro Detroit today. Out of the many grandchildren, there's about 10 of us that work in funeral service. So obviously it's an enormous part of our family's life and history, something we take a lot of pride in because there's so many of us who do it and so many of us who care about it. And we're really grateful that we've never had to sell out our independence. We've never sold to a conglomerate or a publicly traded entity or some large corporation. We're all independently owned and operated, you know, facilities. And, you know, not everybody, I mean, funeral service is important. It's personal. And the fact that we can still provide the services that we provide today in memory of our grandfather means a lot to us.
Patty Lynch, what do all great funeral directors have in common?
The ability to listen. I think much of funeral service, and my uncle, the writer, Thomas Lynch, has said this, I think, at times, 80-90% of the job is showing up and listening. Because when people die, and especially when people die in really, really difficult, tragic ways, it's sort of human nature to go in the other direction, to maybe try to avoid that situation. And funeral directors are among the class of people who say, no, we'll show up when things are really, really, really tough. And I think funeral directors, good funeral directors, know how to show up and they know how to listen. And then they guide people as best they can.
Speaking of showing up,
mm-hmm.
You see families show up at their most vulnerable. Talk about what you see, good and bad, in those families.
Well, you know, vulnerability is a really, really good word for the topic because we really believe that the dead are vulnerable, as are the grieving. And the way in which both the dead and those who are grieving them are treated will always and forever correlate to the way in which our society treats the most vulnerable among us, whether it's the poor or the mentally ill or the refugee or the elderly or the imprisoned. The list goes on and on. So the way in which we treat both the dead and their survivors to us is important in and of itself, but it also speaks to a wider issue in our society, which is that we believe that the vulnerable should be treated with more care and tenderness than they oftentimes are.
I admire your dad for a lot of things. He's helped me in many, many ways. One of the things I admire him most for was there was a homeless man named Joseph Rosignol Jr.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That died, and you buried him like he was the president of a country. You know, your dad made a beautiful holy card.
Yeah.
Why?
Well, my dad had developed a relationship with him, I know, over the years, because he would, you know, sit at one of the corners and ask for change and so forth. And my dad saw him, I think, nearly daily on his commute. And so he would just sort of check in with him and give him money when he could and that sort of thing. So they did develop some type of relationship. But when someone like that dies and there is no one claiming them at the morgue and there are no survivors stepping up to say, you know, that this person's life mattered, I've seen my dad over and over again over many years step up and say, no, as, you know, difficult as this life might have been, or as painful, or in the eyes of the culture, as meaningless as this life might have been, this person has dignity. And I think my dad takes those opportunities to remind his staff and himself that it's important that we treat everybody with that kind of dignity. So
if you want to learn more, www.lynchfuneraldirectors.com. Petty, what has death taught you about life?
It may sound like a strange answer, but it's oftentimes taught me not to take things so seriously. I think that you were asking about, you know, funeral directors in general. Most of the funeral directors I know, certainly the ones that have been at it a long time, have really, really, really great senses of humor. Like, they're usually really funny people, or they're witty, or they can laugh. And they teach you this in mortuary school, and they teach this in medical school, and, you know, when you're training to be a firefighter or, you know, other difficult jobs that deal with tragedy. You know, you have to maintain a sense of humor when you're in the middle of this stuff, or you'll, you know, you can kind of lose your mind. And so, you know, I think being able to laugh at times and keep things in perspective, because now I'll be honest, I've had I remember I had a girlfriend years ago who used to get a little upset with me when she would like complain about like her day or something happened at work, and you know, I maybe buried a baby that morning or something, and she would be like, damn it, you know, like my problem is not that significant. And I'd still try to, you know, listen and be thoughtful about it, but it's hard to, you know, get really worked up about the dumb stuff in life when, you know, people are dealing with the kind of stuff we deal with, you know, every week. So, you know, that's one lesson I've learned.
We're talking to Petty Lynch. 2011, he bought the former home of Stanley Kroeske, 10,000 square feet, for a bargain price of $125,000.
That's true.
11 years later, he's probably put over $1 million into it, but that's a different story.
Yeah.
And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm host Jack Rasula with Petty Lynch. Petty, 2011, you buy 10,000 square foot English style estate once owned by Stanley Kroeske in the Arden Park Historic District, one block south of the cathedral. What were you thinking?
I probably wasn't. I was 27. I didn't really have any money, not much credit. But fortunately, there was a local bank that was willing to help me out, believed in my vision for the place. But I grew up, and I've said this before, I blame my parents entirely. My parents, you know, raised me for much of my childhood across the street from you, Jack, and as you know, a much older house. And I grew up seeing them kind of restore an old place and bring it back to life. And that was just something I was always really, really fascinated by and into. I was into old architecture and buildings, and Detroit obviously has so much of that. And, you know, it was 2010 when I kind of got the idea to start looking for an old house in Detroit to restore. I was living in Birmingham, and I was done with mortuary school and working at the funeral home. And I just found myself going to Detroit more and more for, you know, all the normal things, bars, restaurants, theater, sports games, and just admiring these beautiful old homes. And so this one was listed for sale. It had only had three owners in 100 years. And long story short, in 2011, I purchased it. And I immediately got a buddy of mine from high school to move in. I got a friend that I had known since childhood who went to Marion. She was a nurse at Henry Ford. She took over the carriage house in the back so that I could have some, you know, rental revenue. And the rest is history. Just little by little, year by year, I started fixing it up room by room. And there's still leaks and things that break and all kinds of stuff. But for the most part, it's livable. If you ask my wife, she might argue that it's not always livable, but
also through the years, it's raised a lot of money for a lot of charities because of you. So, all right. There's something in your inner psyche, 2017, you decide to buy something else. What was it?
The Schwitz, the notorious Schwitz bathhouse, the, only historic bathhouse left in the city of Detroit on Oakland Avenue, just north of East Grand Boulevard, not far from where we are right now, and not far from my house. The Schwitz is only about a mile south of my home. And I had never heard of it. I didn't know anything about it. You know, a lot of Jewish guys that grow up in Metro Detroit, they know about it. Even if they haven't been, you know, they know that their fathers or their grandfathers, whoever hung out there. But I was introduced to it by a friend, went in there on a men's only night. And I was like, you know, the Schwitz was pretty run down and had a reputation. I said, I don't know if this is a good idea. And we went down the long hallway after they buzzed us in, and there were like 10 or 12 old Jewish and Russian guys eating steaks in their robes and smoking cigars. And I said, we'll be back next week. This is awesome. And I just started going every week. This is back in like starting in 2012, not long after I bought the house. And we don't have time for the full story, but it was never listed for sale. Long story short, the old Soviet caretaker, who's a dear friend of mine and still works at the Schwitz, he brokered the deal for me with the owner. He knew it was time for a change and that the place needed to be restored. And he knew that I had done that work at my home. And so, yeah, in 2017, we took over. And it's really been an incredible 5 years. The place is so much busier and popular than I honestly ever thought it would be. And I really have to take the time to credit the women involved in the project, because it was basically a men's only club for decades. And now it's women only twice a week. And the women are in many ways the backbone of the place. So
if you want to learn more, www.schwitz, S-C-H-V-I-T-Z, Detroit.com.
Thanks.
That's an old Yiddish word that means
sweat.
Sweat. All right. It's got a lot of history.
It's got a lot of history.
A lot of gambling, purple gang.
A lot of bootlegging. Yeah, I think it's worth noting, you know, for people that may not know about the Schwitz, the reason why the Russian Jews back in the early 30s loved that place so much and established it was, you know, for religious and cultural reasons, of course, but the purple gang, that was one of their main hangouts. And when you're in a 200-degree room, you can't wear a weapon or a wire. So that's where they were able to have their confidential conversations. So it's great. It's great Detroit history.
Okay, I quote you now.
Yep.
The guys who I've been coming here with for years, Wednesday and Thursday nights, what they've taught me is that you do not have to like each other, but you must love each other. What's the difference?
That's great. So when you hang out at the Schwitz, you know, you're going to meet everything from multimillionaire real estate tycoons from Birmingham who still come down because their fathers and grandfathers took them, to Ukrainian and Russian immigrants from Hamtramck, to Chaldean guys, to black guys, you know, all over the map, socioeconomically, socially, religiously, you know, melting pot in every sense of the word. And a lot of these guys, they wouldn't really be friends outside of the place. But when they're there, they're all there to do the same thing, which is to relax, take it easy. And to maintain that type of environment, you find a way to get along with each other. And, you know, even if you don't agree with each other politically or otherwise, you know, you can break bread together. You can sit down at the same table. And that's something that really made an impression on me right away. And it reminded me a lot of my college football team. 100 guys from all over the place, different backgrounds, different upbringings. You figure out a way to take care of each other because you're in it together. So I think our society used to have stronger neighborhoods, faith organizations, fraternal organizations, unions, you name it, all these places where people got together. And we don't have those things as much as we used to, I think. So the Schwitz for me is a place where people can really see past each other's differences and hang out. And I think that's important.
The Schwitz has offerings such as bubble schmises, introduction to restorative massage bodywork. That's the kind of stuff those Jesuits taught you.
Yeah, they did. Well, they taught me that my salvation depends on the Jews in a big way. So I'm doing what I can to, you know, carry the torch.
Is it true that since April, you're serving up food as well?
Yeah, no, the food's been a major part of the situation at the Schwitz for years. So at least a couple days a week, it's the traditional steak dinner, which people have known about for decades. And then three other days of the week, the kitchen rotates. So we've had everything from Vietnamese to Puerto Rican to Tunisian to Lebanese. It's like the United Nations in there. And the north end where the Schwitz is located doesn't have a ton of restaurants and food options. It's a bit of a food desert. And so the way in which the Schwitz has become a place for people even just to carry out, even if they're not staying there, they can just carry out dinner. It's been really nice to see that development.
A few months ago, you bought a 4-acre property in Lexington, Michigan.
Yeah.
Eventually the Schwitz North.
Right.
Why?
So
hey, what's wrong with it?
I got a fetish for money pits. So I had dreamed ever since, like, so the Schwitz, you know, the part I didn't mention was I started Schwitzing in my late 20s. And it was a time in my life where I just had a lot of anxiety and work was kind of stressful. And, you know, I found the Schwitz to be like this little oasis, this sort of respite. And I came to find out that there are people all over the world who use heat, who use what some people call climate therapy to deal. We've had a surprising number of combat veterans that use the Schwitz to deal with PTSD or other things they might be going through. A lot of addicts in recovery. And so it's interesting to see the way that people use it. So at any rate, I had dreamed for a couple years anyway about having a sauna on the lake to be able to go from the 200 degrees into the Great Lakes. To me was like a total fantasy. And so my wife was nice enough to support me in this vision. And we really love Lexington. Lexington, as many people know, is just north of Port Huron and only about an hour and 15 minutes from Metro Detroit. And so the proximity we really love, and we're expecting to get people from Metro Detroit who love the Schwitz to be able to go up to the lake and not just spend 3 or 4 hours, but maybe spend 1 or 2 days and hang out. So yeah, so we've been working. We hope to have the sauna. We already have had renters at the house on the lake, but we're hoping to have the sauna ready for the fall.
Somebody once told me, he said, Jack, you are a peach in an apple orchard. Patty, you're also a peach in
an
apple orchard. But I said, that's a good thing.
Yeah, so. I'll take it as a compliment.
We're talking to Patty Lynch, and I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR.
Jack Krasula, host of WJR's Anything Is Possible, the weekly radio visit, brings his 15 years of inspirational storytelling to hardcover. With God, anything is possible.
Anything is possible.
15 of Jack's more than 750 tales of defeating odds and achieving the extraordinary. Like Bob Woodruff, whose job covering the war in Iraq nearly cost him his life. And Nick Vujicic, the limbless evangelist who has stunned millions with his message of acceptance and grace. With God, anything is possible. Order now while signed copies are still available at trustinusllc.square.site. That's trustinusllc.square.site. And as Jack says,
make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spohol. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Patty Lynch. Since 2018, he's been on the Advisory Council of Christ Child House. Patty, tell us about Christ Child House.
So Christ Child House is a really, really special place in Detroit. I'm proud to be on the Advisory Council there. Christ Child Society is something that exists across the United States. There's many chapters to the Christ Child Society, but Detroit's chapter is the only one that actually runs their own residential facility for boys. So boys who've been in and out of the foster care system, some have dealt with, you know, over 10 foster situations. Most of them have been abused in a variety of ways. They end up at Christ Child House. And it serves boys ages 5 to 16, and it can hold up to about 30 boys at a time. And, you know, here they're treated like family. I think the Christ Child Society of Detroit has almost 400 members. So they have this just army of people looking after them, making sure that they're being educated, making sure that they've got everything that they need to try to have as normal an experience as possible, and to treat them with, you know, the love that they deserve. And Christ Child House and the society are in the middle of a huge capital campaign to build a new facility because the boys have been in the same house for decades, and it's definitely time for a new, bigger and better home. And so that's something that everybody involved with Christ Child has been working hard on.
If you want to learn more, www.christchildhouse.org. Ford Motor Company, in 1957, 65 years ago, gave a couple acres of land at Joy Road west of Greenfield.
Mm-hmm.
That's been the location.
Right.
How much money do we need?
Well, I think the goal is about $14 million. The Pulte family has provided nearly, a third of that. I think their pledge is $4 million. And I think all but a few million have been raised. So incredible support from the community. People know how good Christ Child is and how important it is. And, you know, I think that the community is responding accordingly. And I think this new facility is going to, you know, take Christ Child's mission into the next century with a lot of positivity. And these boys, with everything that they've been through, they deserve the best that we can try to provide.
www.christchildhouse.org. The mission is to be an innovative treatment program that fosters hope and healing for children and families impacted by trauma.
Mm-hmm.
The people whose ministry is to serve Christ Child House, led by Maria.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about the compassion that the staff has.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's incredible. I mean, you know, I get the question a lot as a funeral director, I don't know how you do what you do. And I can look at Maria Lesnau, who is just an incredible executive director. I mean, I think she's regarded as one of the best in the state of Michigan, if not the best. And Christchild is super lucky to have her. But when you think about the way in which they serve these boys day in and day out on a daily basis, and the whole staff there, and the environment that they create for these boys who've dealt with so much trauma and abuse, I don't know if I can think of a more important mission. And, you know, this is how you break the cycles of poverty and abuse and crime. You know, you impact a young boy at 7, 8, 9 years old before he's 20 and already back in the system or incarcerated. So I think that the work that they're doing is important for the here and now, but it's equally important for the future of this community.
Back in July, 2 months ago, you and your wife,
mm-hmm.
you're expecting any day.
We are.
All right. Yeah. Another money pit. You convinced her to buy a convent.
A convent. This is true.
Why?
So she's like the first to tell me when I have a really, really bad idea. That's one of the reasons why I love her. And like, it turns out like 9 out of 10 of my ideas are bad. But I knew that
marrying her was a great idea, though, Teddy.
Yeah, best decision I've ever made. So we were both educated by Polish nuns. I was out in Holy Name, as you know. My wife grew up in Southwest Detroit and went to Our Lady Queen of Angels. After her family left Vietnam, her father and mother ended up in Southwest Detroit. And, you know, incredible story of sacrifice. They spent, you know, pretty much all of their income on their children's Catholic education. And my wife and her siblings educated themselves out of the situation that they were in. But the old convent, after the nuns left, the Capuchin priests lived there for a while. When it was listed for sale, I went and looked at it with my wife, and to my surprise, she said, you know what, we can make this work. So we're establishing art and wellness studios, basically office space.
Yeah. Teddy Lynch, you're following in Dad's footsteps. You're doing an awful lot of good.
Thank you.
For this community. Keep up the great work.
Thank you.
Please join us next Saturday. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spall.